And now, Morris League Media would like to present to you, in studio live with hosts Dante Morris, Dominic Morris, and me, Todd Sullivan, Let's Talk Sports. Hey, welcome back once again. You are listening to MLP number 9. We are in Morris Media Studios. How everybody feeling today? Welcome.
Oh, feeling good on this Monday morning. A lot of talk about today. I'm ready to get into it.
Yeah, a lot of talk about. We had several doubleheaders going on Saturday, and we also had games going on Sunday. Let's just go ahead and bring it up. Let's talk about how we started off the week Saturday morning.
Saturday morning was kind of rough for us. You know, we had a doubleheader against the Twins, and I'll say our batting wasn't up to par. Base running wasn't up to par. And a dude named Miles just kind of hit 2 3-run bombs on us.
Yeah, for us, I mean, in the Green Sox in the Morris League, we took a little slide, you know, a little departure, you know, this weekend. Both the first game, we started off real good. About the third or fourth inning, it was a tie ball game, 3-3. And then pitching change and end up walks, then grand slam. Oh, actually, three run. There was a pass ball before that would have been a grand slam. 3-run home run.
Oh, so what did he say? On the pass ball, did he say anything about the grand slam being taken away from
him? Yeah, he was like, he said, I almost had my first ever grand slam. Like, he got mad at the guy for scoring off a pass ball.
But, yeah, it's baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah, so with the Twins and the Green Sox out there, who had the later games?
The later games, it was two doubleheaders. So on the other field, we was playing at Peterson, Green Sox, and Twins. And at Rosemont, it was the Dragons and Slugs. And the first game, the Dragons lost 13-7. In the second game, they lost 13-9.
Dragons scored 6 runs on the Slugs, huh?
Yeah.
So their bats come alive like of old, or you know, a little defensive struggle on the other end?
Yeah, according to Ben Legg, he said that defense was lacking. And their pitching was lacking, too. They was just getting a lot of hits, and they was moving. They was getting guys on, moving them over, getting them in. And they said it was a common trend that happened. Get a guy on, steal second, knocks him in, and they did that about 5-6 times.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I've been involved with, you know, several types of leagues. This one being, you know, the dominant league for sure. But it seems to always be the same. It seems like, you know, every team, you know, like when we first started, every team had at least, you know, 2-3 pitchers deep.
Yeah.
And then as we went on, you can actually say every team had an ace. That was the one, you know, who are we playing today? Oh, we're playing the Bears. Oh, I hope Zach's not pitching.
Yeah.
You know, I hope he pitched the other day.
Yeah.
You know, but now you look at it, and it seems like the majority of the teams in the league are, you know, it's, you call it a bullpen if you like, but, you know, it's just guys that go out there and, you know, try to throw strikes. It's a little different type of pitch and catch, but, you know, trying to get, you know, pitchers to commit to a team, you know, once a coach sees a pitcher and he wants him on the team, you know, he's going to be plucked, and no matter what league you play in, somebody's going to see that ace, you know, people are going to be chirping in their ear.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of players, you know, a lot of kids in general, people, you know, they don't want to say no when it comes to playing ball.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, verbally back themselves into committing to another team just because that coach talked to them first.
Yeah.
And then pitchers start jumping ship. But, you know, our league seemed to, you know, always flip back, you know, with, you know, the defense, the offense, the pitching. But this year, you know, it's so competitive because there'll be teams where 1 through 9 will just be on fire offensively.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then the next week you're like, oh, man, last week they were bombing. They had 9 hits, you know, 6 runs. And then the next week they come out and it's like 4 hits, 1 run, no runs. It's just, you know, this year's, you know, flipping back and forth. It's pretty interesting. I know the Slugs struggling in that one lost victory.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing some teams, you know, I'm not saying anything about the Dragons or the Green Sox, but, you know, a team like that being able to pop off and be competitive and score runs like that just, you know, goes to show you that, you know, offense and pitching seems to be hit and miss this year.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you never know
you know, every year what the Mariners League have to offer. You know, last year it was more defense pitching. This year is kind of up in the air. So, you know, with the records being kind of close with two teams in the league and other two teams with similar records, it's going to be funny to see who's going to make the playoffs. We're going to have a playoff prediction about our league pretty soon coming up because, you know, it's going to be up in the air.
Well, chicks dig the long ball. Is that the way the season's going this year?
Kinda so.
Yeah.
Chicks dig stealing the third, you know, slide in safe.
Speaking of stealing, boy, that was a massive game. I mean, with Nick on the bases, I know David, you know, he did hurt himself sliding in the home, like, mm-hmm. you know, the way he did. So it's like, as soon as he got on first, it's like, hey, I need to have a runner for my injured player. Pointing right at Nick, everybody's saying, hey, it's the last batter, which fortunately it was, Nick, because you just been bulleting around them bases, man. You got out there, you know, twice and ended up scoring runs both times.
Oh, yeah, I ended up scoring 3 runs.
Yep.
And I got 8 stolen bags so far this season. You know, tied.
Not putting the stats out there.
Not putting it out there.
He had 3 yesterday.
Yep, so I just, you know. I've just been feeling good out there. I wish I could hit the ball a little better, but, you know, it's all fun. I'm seeing the ball good. I just got to work on getting that, you know, back elbow up and driving through the ball. But,
well, yeah. You can say you're starting to do that because normally you just – it's either dead center or in the gap. I mean, that's your zone. That's your power. But you actually got around. You pulled that ball. Yeah, that was a nice crack. I mean, a solid hit off the bat. Your hands got through quick.
Oh, yeah, thanks. You know, I just saw his pitching, I was like, all right, I got to time it right, you know. First time around, I just had, like, a little dribbler up the middle. I ended up beating it out. But the second time, I was like, let me time it, and, you know, let me get a nice little drive on it. So I'm glad it all connected. And I think, you know, our team, you know, we just got to figure that out. We got to figure out, you know, where to hit, how to hit, like, how to hit to our strengths and, you know, things like that. Go with the pitch, and, you know, that way we can manufacture more runs. I think that's one of the things that Green Sox just need to, you know, finally come around with because we all have the potential to do it. So I think next game, if we play to our strengths, you know, play a little small ball, and we'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm one of the guys on the team where I see a ball, and even though I'm only, you know, 5'7", you know, 130 pounds soaking wet, I feel like I could yoke one over. So I think yesterday, you know, with a 2-0 pitch and a 3-1 pitch, I thought it was going to come right down the middle and I was going to use all my gym strength and try to pull one over, but it ended up going in the air both times. So I think, yeah, if we, as a Green Sox, you know, if we get rid of that mentality and just trying to drive the ball and just, you know, let the pitching do the work for us, I think we'll be better off with more line drives, more grounders, more just hitting the ball where it's pitched at.
I think our game plan just worked out perfectly. Everybody took deep counts.
Yeah.
Their first at-bat, which got the pitcher a little bit flustered.
Yeah.
Then he started, you know, aiming the ball instead of pitching the ball. And that's when we started taking the advantage in the third inning there. But with the, you know, just going back because I told you I was going to mention it, with that 3-1 count, exactly – so did you spot the ball early? It just felt like that's your pitch.
I felt like out the hand, it felt like it was coming right down in my zone. It ended up being a little high, but when I was on my left side when that happened too. So when I see the ball coming out of his hand, you know, I thought, you know, my eyes lit up. I thought, okay, this one is going to take a ride in the gap somewhere. And then I just came up a little early and got under it, and it came up.
I just think you're pressing yourself. You got to chill back and relax because you're coming up on your front leg a little bit. You know, it could be because you're spotting the ball early, but it could be that you just want to get out of this little minor slump that you have and get on base. Once you get on base, you know, everything's going to be just fine.
Yeah.
But that's all part of what we were talking about, you know, in being patient. And I think, you know, once the guys were getting on base and moving around and things were flowing, you just wanted to take part of the action. But
yeah,
you know, I know Dominic was kind of teasing you about, you know, you being behind the dish the other night, but it was kind of unique seeing shortstop style there behind the dish. All your hands seem to be snatching everything. How was your legs? How are you feeling today?
Man, both my thighs is real sore. I woke up this morning and I was like, ah, man, it's kind of sore. I can kind of see what catchers go through, you know, but you know, I kind of like catching, you know. I just got to learn how to block with my body, but also I didn't have a cup on either, so that was part of the reason.
first met you, you were solid, just sitting there in the sixth spot there at shortstop. Uh-huh. And then now you've ventured everywhere from outfield, second base, third base, pitcher, catcher, first base. But let me ask you a question. Now that you guys are playing on the same team and you got Nick's, you know, just standing out there in center field, locking that down, looking in straight through at your brother, what was going through your mind through all those pitches, you know, even through the good innings and the bad? What were you doing out there? I just got to know.
I'm really hard on my brother, so I get frustrated. Yeah, I get frustrated a lot. Like, I'm like, man, move your body to the ball and, you know, stop using your hands, like, block, put it in front and just little stuff like that. I'm like, man, or even to framing a ball, framing the pitches, I like to frame that a little better. So I'm like extra hard on Dante. I'll be expecting a lot out of you. Sometimes hard though when I call a curveball and a fastball come. That happened a couple times with Ryan. Yeah, I was like, ugh.
I saw that and I told Ying, don't ever do that. He goes, what? I go, Dante just got crossed up. You can see your head.
Yeah.
Flay back. Like, hey, that's not what was supposed to come. So it was interesting. So you said it happened twice?
Happened twice, yeah.
Okay, I saw one for sure. I was guessing on the second one, but you know that it partly being maybe, you know, Ryan, you know, wanting to throw that certain pitch, because I went out there, I told Ryan, hey, if you want to shake him off, shake him off. He goes, no, it's all good. And then shortly after that, crossed you up again.
Yeah.
So you know, it's kind of funny out there, but it was nice to see. It looked like you guys were relaxed out on the field. We were playing Green Sox baseball. I don't know how long it's been, but it was nice to see the Green Sox style out there, being out there, you know, coaching the guys. It was a lot of fun for me. I put out, you know, we had 3 hit and runs, 2 bunts, and I went back and looked. I put out 8, but it wasn't 8. It was 6 stolen bases, because that last one technically was a full hit and run. But still, you have guys on base from the second inning on. Each guy's doing multiple hit and runs, but that third baseman was getting a little bit upset, because every time we hit and run over from man from second to third, the ball went right where he was standing.
Oh, yeah.
And he kept looking at me, why are you doing this to me, coach? Why are you doing this to me, coach? But it just feels so good when things work.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been struggling. I mean, when we hit, we're hitting it right to people, or we're hitting into a double play.
Yeah.
But it was finally nice to see people realize, going, man, this is the way it used to be. And they actually started relaxing. So I'm hoping the Green Sox realize, hey, relax, play the game, be patient, you know, don't work so hard, you know. Make the game come to you. Don't try to, you know, push. Don't try to make that hard effort, because it just leads to mistakes. And, you know, only a couple mental errors, which was fun to see, but it was definitely a comfortable atmosphere. I can definitely tell the guys finally had some fun, and hopefully from this point on that they'll realize it's just relax, do what Green Sox do, and we'll be all right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, next game is the Slugs for us, and I'm looking to, you know, for revenge. You know, that was our first game of the season. We got 2 with them, so.
Okay, so what can I do to jinx the Slugs if they already think I'm their jinx box?
You should tell them they think they're going to win, and then we'll just come back with that W, you know?
But I am definitely scared of the Slugs. I think they're the powerhouse of the league, you know what I mean, coming at you.
And I got one with the Slugs, too, man. They stole. I was catching that game, too. I threw one back to the pitcher, and they came in and stole on me. So I got to get them back on that one, you know. I threw it back. I wasn't looking. They snuck a run in that way. So Green Sox got something for y'all.
They also blended when they was up, like, 9 runs, 10 runs, too.
But like I told my players, you can't get really mad at that, you know. Like, people play baseball, you know. We got to play baseball, too, you know. Like, if they win, they win, you know. How we win, we going to win. So it got to be, you know, you just going to have to give it to them. That's all it is, you know. I'm ready for it.
Well, were they, you know, practicing on things, trying to get things work, or was it just to run up the score? I mean, there's 2 ways to look at it.
It was like, if I remember correctly, it was like the top of the inning, no outs. And by that time, it was already like 13 to like 4 or something like that. We didn't score 6 yet. I think they got a bunch of lead off the inning. And that's why guys was upset, including me. Well,
we have to,
Slugs versus them,
we have to
Saturday.
Talk to coach to see if he called that.
All right, yeah. No, I think Dustin did it. Did he? Was that him?
I don't know.
I think he the one who bunted it. I don't know. We'll see them this Saturday, though. We'll see Saturday.
Yeah, we'll have to put that, you know, when we do our Bush League debate, we can always throw that in.
Yeah, yeah.
Good looking out, slugs. Hey, but anyways, you guys can keep laughing in the car. You know, nothing hard, no haters here. But let's talk about, you know, we're close to the middle of the season. Seems like at the beginning, you know, everybody was, you know, all on the same page. But right now, as usual, being so competitive as the league is, it seems like, you know, we got three solid teams in the hunt and a couple of teams, you know, just two games behind. So once again, you know, it's going to be a great playoff race to try to get into position and get home field advantage. So really looking forward to the next couple weeks. And with the Green Sox playing the Slugs, you know, even if we take one of the two games, that's going to put us in a good situation, only one game behind.
Yeah. Yeah, so we right there, you know, with, you know, all four teams being so close, you know, one or two wins will either put you first or put you second or put you in third. So, you know, this week will be a very crucial week, you know, on all teams. And I'm pretty sure all the teams are just preparing and trying to get better and trying to put their best guys out there. Yeah, we got to at least get one, looking to get two, but at least get one and that knocks out the top and put us up. You know, so we'll be doing our job playing against right now. The Slugs is sitting at first place. You know, that'll do our job in creeping up that line.
Yeah, but I can't get off, you know, the Green Sox pitching efforts of Ryan Okamoto. That was just unbelievable. When I saw him walking up, I said, I have a game plan and you're on the hill. Can you do it? He just, well, I caught two games. I pitched some innings and I said, look, your ball has a natural slide. Yeah, to the outside of the plate, so even if we try to throw extreme inside, you know, it's still going to be an okay pitch, and we plan on pitching to the defense, and that all came out and worked. But it was you know, a complete game victory for him. You know, 5-0 going into this their top of the fifth. So, you know, shout out to Ryan. That was a great pitching effort out there. It was nice to watch.
Oh yeah.
So moving on with the Aces and the Sabres, you know, another group that we need to talk about before we move to the next segment. Mm-hmm. You know, they both coming in and traveling. I went out. I was looking at the Aces. They seem to have, you know, very solid baseball staff from top to bottom. Uh-huh. How have they been comparing to the teams in the league since you guys have seen more of those games?
League wise. No, they brought out a cool, decent team. You know, they played against the Twins and they played against the Slugs. I think in the Slugs game got a little away, you know, on the Aces' behalf. But as far as the Twins and Aces went, I think it was a two-run ball game. So the competition was real good from both sides. I think you know, that feel of an outside team coming in really brought the P's and Q's of our teams up. Teams in our league. The only problem was that a lot of the regular players from our leagues, it was hard to get out there on a Sunday. You know, it wasn't the everyday third baseman or everyday outfielder and things like that. And I think if it was, the outcome would be a lot different. The same with the Slugs, too. I think if they had, they usually pitch their, you know, top pitchers for our league, of course, you know, on Saturdays. And the Sunday was like the extra game. So I think if it was like a little shift like that, the game would be a lot different.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about it earlier about, you know, where the pitching is at in having to be able to set up for the week to have the guy you want to throw. And, you know, it's just coaching. You know, if you look at the schedule's out before the season starts. Once you get your rotation flowing, you should be able to break it up. You don't have to let a guy always throw 5, 6, 7 innings. You know, why can't, you know, trust your guys and set up maybe a 3-2-2 or something like that. Mm. But, you know, it's just breaking it down. If you know you have a doubleheader and a Sunday coming up, you know, write it out, put it down, you know, see how you can make things stretch out and work so you can use everybody. You don't have to just keep relying on one pitcher.
Yeah. And then the other team, the Chico Sabres, that's the team that the Green Sox and Dragons are going to play November 4th. And that's a good team. It's an older team. But them guys, they could just sit back and hit, you know, they smart hitters and stuff like that. But I think
second time around, you know, it'll be good for us because we play them in preseason. And now they're coming down from Chico to play at both of our teams. So.
That's the one thing I really liked about that team is, you know, very smart in the box. They seem to get the pitcher in a situation where they have to throw their best pitch, and they just sit on that pitch and take it for a ride.
That's exactly what they did.
They got a lot of smart hitters in the box. That's a great sight to see for the Sabres. But, of course, what's been going on, Major League Baseball happenings, you know, strange stuff has been going on. There's a team out there that just seems to find themselves in an elimination situation, and they just won't get the heck out of our way.
Gotta give it up to Barry Zito. You know, Barry Zito,
beast.
I actually thought they threw him just to let him get some experience in, because I thought they was gonna lose, and I think he surprised everybody by shutting them out. You know what I'm saying? Giving them, I believe, 7 strong or 8 strong innings, and he the reason why they playing today. So
you saying if they win, he top down, he's an MVP of the series?
I believe so, just by that performance.
Scudero's MVP of the series if they win.
Scudero has been consistent. He has been consistent defensively and offensively.
I think with Zito, you look at the Cardinals, and they're all great power hitters or fastball hitters, and I just think Bochy said, you know what, I have a guy who's healthy, who's warm, who has one of the best, you know, curveball, changeup, fastballs. I mean, even though his fastball is hitting 83 to 85, you know, it's that changeup and curveball and deception that makes him so difficult to hit. He goes, these guys can't hit curveballs. Let's see what happens. I'll let them throw 3, 4, 5. I got the pin. I got guys that I, you know, Lincecum can come in and throw a couple, and then I can go straight to my relievers. But he didn't have to do that. He was able to let him go, you know, almost the whole game. I mean, an unhittable curveball. When you hit a curveball straight into the ground, your timing is way off. Like you saw a lot of guys leaning out over the plate. So they knew it was coming, and they still couldn't catch up to you. And when I heard that they were going to start him, I was just like, hey, this gives us Cardinals an opportunity. But as soon as I saw his first couple pitches, I was like, man, that Bochy was pretty smart, man. Our guys look silly up there trying to hit that dang curveball, and he was able to throw that curveball for 80.
When I see that pitch on TV, I'm like, I could hit that pitch. Like, you're just sitting back, look so slow. Like, you just sit back and drink a cup of coffee and then, you know, drive that ball to the opposite way. But if pro hitters can't hit it, it must be really something deceptive about that curveball. They could hit it, but it might take them 5 innings to catch up to it. That's the thing. Like, you know, they see curveballs, you know, they see fastballs, but they used to a guy throwing 93 to 96 consistently, and then a guy come in throwing 82, 80 miles per hour curveball, and might bump it back up to 86.
Probably got a sick, like, whip to it or drops off the table. He got that 12-6 thing going.
Yeah, real hard spin. That's why a lot of his, if they do make contact, it's going to be a mile-high pop-up.
Yeah.
But, I was mad, but how can I get mad, you know, being a pitcher and knowing how hard he's worked, what happened to him when they didn't put him in the lineup when they did win the World Series, and he just came out and shined. It was just like props to the, you know, the veteran. The funny thing is I was thinking, is like people were tweeting and putting out, you know, like the A's of old, you know, pitching like he was, you know, from Oakland back in the day, and the first thing out of his mouth when he was in front of the press is he was like, you know, it's not like the days of old of, you know, when I was pitching for the A's. It's what I do now, and it's, you know, in the now. And it was real cool that he was just trying to tell his fans, thank you, but, you know, it's nothing special. It's what I do. And, you know, he just had a couple of bad years, and according to the media. But if you actually went back and looked, it was the defense. It was a lot of unearned runs, and so it wasn't a bad season, but that's how people looked at it, because they lost the games, it was Zito's fault. But then all of a sudden he comes in and, you know, pitches a gem, and he's, you know, the local hero MVP, which he is, that's for sure.
Out of the big three, which one of y'all think has the most upside right now, out of Tim Hudson, Barry Zito, and Mark Mulder? Like, thinking back, you know, back in Oakland, which one of them guys you thought was just going to be that automatic Hall of Fame player, and what do you think right now had the better career now?
I never thought Mulder. I never thought Mulder was like the guy. Like, even though he was cool, I couldn't really see him lasting in the league for that long. Why not? He looked too injury prone. Like, it looked like, you know, he'll give us you 2 good years and then he'll be out. So I kind of knew his career was going to kind of end off of injury.
He looks good on the MLB network.
Yeah, he's real good. Yeah, he got a good, broadcast career. And Hudson, he's a guy that probably a hanger. He'll be like Darren Oliver. He'll probably stay in the league, stay in the bullpen maybe, and get you some innings, get you some situation stuff where you'll see him around for a couple more years. And Zito doing Zito right now.
Well, Zito's a natural lefty. If you're a lefty, you're wanted.
Yeah.
You know, plain and simple. But, you know, Mulder had, you know, the most upside with his A's and when it came to, you know, his trade and stuff. But, you know, I would have to say Hudson as well because he, you know, it's always been hit and miss when a pitcher goes from the National League to the American League to the American League to the National League.
Yeah.
And with Atlanta, he ended up being, you know, he went from the fourth starter to the second starter, and then he was a guy they relied on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up being their ace. So I'd have to say, you know, definitely Hudson. But if it comes to who would I want, you know, if it came to one at bat, one fresh pitcher, you know, hit wins the game, I would not want to face Barry Zito, plain and simple.
That's interesting. Interesting that it all come out from Oakland. And I thought when I saw Mark Mulder, you know, with that, you know, his fastball and, you know, his deceptive pitches, I thought, like, this dude was going to be like an Oakland A forever. And he was going to be – I never thought, first of all, that Oakland was going to leave. I thought they were going to, like, sit there and build a dynasty. But, you know, it's a small market in Oakland. But I really thought that Mark Mulder, you know, really was going to be the guy that, you know, take it through. I look at Tim Hudson. He already has a real good career, but I thought he was going to be more of a Randy Johnson, you know, Justin Verlander type of player where he's always making the headlines and stuff like that. But he has a real decent, you know, career right now. But I thought Mark Mulder would be the guy out of three. And Zito, I think Zito won out of all of them with that contract. You know, so either way it goes, he's sitting good pocket-wise.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about that contract and saying just this one game he's going to be able to sign one or two more years for a good price. But, you know, any lefty that can pitch like that, has longevity, is deceptive, they're going to have a spot in somebody's lineup, even if it's just coming in for one batter. And when you look at guys, you know, at his age and where he's at in his career, it's only going to be about $3.5 to maybe $5 million per year for Zito for the next couple of years if they're going to base him off this one performance.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not very many teams out there that have that spot in their lineup for a pitcher to take a spot on the 25-man roster that they know is only going to be used for a third of an inning, you know, two-thirds of an inning, or maybe a whole inning. You know, so it'll be interesting to see if the Giants do re-sign him or if he does move. I do think he's going to stay in San Francisco and he's going to take a deep pay cut because, you know, he, you know, from the Bay Area, spent his whole career over here in the Bay Area. You know, he's a musician. He's always playing at places in the Bay Area. But I think he realizes that it's going to be his decision. He's going to want to play where he knows he'll be in the situation that suits him best.
Yeah.
And be relaxed, and I think he'll be staying in San Francisco for about $2.5-3 million.
That would be nice because, you know, the Giants' history of re-signing players, position players, is kind of tough. You know, with Tejada and Uribe and guys like that, that would be nice if he could finish out his career. Well, would you think his career will be finished after that one-year, two-year deal?
Yeah, I think he'll want three, he'll settle for two, and that'll be about it. And then he'll take Mulder's spot on MLB Network. just because of his character. And he's a real funny guy, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just, you know, having Brian Wilson. Because, you know, Brian Wilson was the only crazy. And then all of a sudden, Romo jumps on. And he becomes, all of a sudden, he's the main wacko now. But it just seems like there's a lot of relax with Huff, Pence. Mm-hmm. You know, it really seems like those are the guys that are... calming everybody down and making light of it. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, when it comes to an elimination game, that they're not so stressed out due to players like that in the locker room and in the dugout.
Yeah.
And they just need one camera constantly on those guys, you know, in a little box in the up-hand corner just so you can have a little entertainment while the game's going on.
Yeah, really, though. But San Francisco got a lot of money, so I think that should sign Zito again. After 2010, they've been swimming in money. You go to Nike Town, you see Giants licensed stuff, Sports Authority, they selling hats. You got all these bandwagon fans up here in Sacramento that's buying merchandise. So I think they could buy Zito contract.
I know they could, but do they want to?
You know, Brian Sabian and Larry Barrett, it's, you never know. You know. You were talking about it with position players and even with their pitching staff. You know, in the early 2000s and the late 90s, they had a solid pitching, and their contract comes up, and most of them, you know, go to the Dodgers or, yeah, you know, go to a competitive team, which has always drove me crazy, but Sabian doesn't seem to care about that. But it's just weird how Sabian, you know, he's hit and miss on his trades, you know, mm-hmm. with Beltran and, you know, things like that, where he gets some guys for just 1 year and it doesn't seem to pan out. But what upsets me about Brian is when the one guy that he does get and comes over, like Scooter Rowe, you know, he's talking himself up. It's just like, you know, stay in the background. Let the, you know, it's the players. It has nothing to do with you. You brought more losers over than you brought winners.
Yeah.
But so, you know, since we're talking about the Giants, well, you know, of course, Game 7, everybody's talking about it. You got, you know, the fan favorite, Mr. Matt Cain, out there on the hill ready to pitch. He's been struggling, Wainwright. It's going to be real interesting especially with the weather that's going on in Game 7. You know, a lot of the games for the Cardinals have been come-from-behind victories throughout the whole playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants have always battled, you know, and then now all of a sudden it's switched where it seems like the Giants, you know, they get one guy on base and he's going to end up scoring somehow, some way. So with everything flipped like that, how do you think Game 7 is going to go? Is it going to be a tight race, or is it going to be one-sided?
My prediction is going to be one-sided. It's going to be a small victory, though. Like, runs is going to be few. I'm thinking it's going to be 3-0, 4-0 Giants. I just think that, you know, one side is going to be definitely a pitching duel, and one side is going to have that extra player that gets it done. I think today is going to be Paolo Sandoval. I think he had a real good game yesterday.
Yeah, they can't get that guy out for some reason, though.
And I think that it's really going to be a game of inches. It's going to be a lot of small ball, and I think the game's going to be won in the early innings. Yadier Molina is going to come alive, go 2-for-3 with a home run, 2 RBIs, and he's going to take St. Louis to the World Series.
Man, you ran
six with a 6-0 victory.
I remember before that you were saying that Barry Zito is going to come in and pitch again today.
He will pitch today, but Yadier Molina, nobody really going to stop him. And John Jay is going to lead off and get on base every time.
See, that's just, I think, you know, John Jay is going to have, he was the guy that has basically had the Cardinals on his back just by, you know, his leadoff positioning and his center field skill. So if he doesn't turn it up, if he doesn't turn around, it's going to be scary as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, when it comes to Game 7s, you know, I was telling you guys earlier, the Giants are 0-for-5 in playoff Game 7s. Cardinals Game 7 history is in the low 80 percentile, because they've been in the playoffs, what is it, 21 times? So I know they're my team and I've been harping on, but I also, like last year, I said there was no way and they surprised me. But you, as a gambler, if you're a gambler, if you bet on a streak, you only lose once. So I guess I'm going to have to go with the streak and say the Cardinals are going to end up, you know, following through in their Game 7 victories. But, yeah, I think it's also going to be close. I was thinking, you know, either Yachty was going to be able to do something or Beltran, you know. So I'm going to go ahead and call it out and say Beltran is going to be the guy that comes through. But, you know, Yachty's the only one that's been getting on base. So Yachty will be on base. Well, Beltran comes up and smacks him, but their batting order doesn't pan out that way. But yeah, I think Beltran's gonna do it. And God, the score is running through my head. I say either 3-1 or 4-2, something like that.
What you guys think about Mike Matheny though? You think he's kind of like a John Gruden after a Tony Dungy team, where Tony La Russa like laid out the team and he just falling through? Or
No. You think he's doing work? He was the Cardinals catcher, you know. Yeah. 2003 through 2007, something like that.
Yeah.
So he caught for a World Series as well.
Yeah.
All catchers are like that. You look at every catcher, the Angels catcher, Socha,
yeah.
Man, he's just a beast, crazy man, aggressive. Every catcher that becomes a head coach is just like that. Yankees coach, Washington's coach, when he was younger. So all those guys, if you were an ex-catcher, you just seem to be a maniac manager for some reason. It's just in their blood.
Yeah.
He was catching a lot of flack yesterday, though, because not taking out Carpenter early. He got tagged, and everybody was saying, this is, again, closer. Why did he hit? Why they put him up hitting? Why they put him through the fifth inning, when it was already 5-0?
Well, that's because Carpenter has already hit a home run in the playoffs. And he was batting Carpenter as a hitting. He was almost batting .500.
Yeah, he was 4-6 in the series.
He knows that he's a great pitcher, and if he can get him on the right track, that maybe he would be able to turn this thing around. Couldn't hit, couldn't get on the right track. He gone.
Yeah, because he said he only had six at bats throughout the whole season. Yeah. What you guys think about these young managers though? Because I know guys like Ron Washington must be mad if you see people like Robin Ventura, Mike Matheny, they coming in just only 3 or 4 years after they retired. And, somebody like Washington been waiting 16 years to get the opportunity. You think that's like a trend, kind of like you see in football and baseball or in basketball?
It's like how the GMs was like in the early 2000s, where you had Brian Cashman, Theo Epstein's, and the De La Sun for the Cleveland Indians, the all 28-year-old, 29-year-old GMs. I think it's the same thing. If it works in one system, everybody else going to try and see if they can get that same success. So I think what's next is, I think you're going to see more of that. I think Jason Veritek is going to be the new coach for the Boston Red Sox. I really do.
They just signed the guy from the Blue Jays to be the coach.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cito Gaston?
Nah, it's another guy.
Is he young?
No.
Nah. Oh, okay.
I can't remember his name right now. But exactly what you're saying with the younger GMs and all that stuff, because if those GMs, young or old, if the team needs discipline, they're going to get an old veteran cat that's just going to come in and just stir everything up.
Yeah.
But if they want that change, they get, young players.
Yeah,
people that had a pedigree. It's not like it used to be, where coaches would work their way up through a system, through an assistant coach turning into a hitting coach, and eventually getting the third base coach job, and then all of a sudden he's sitting right next to the manager, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden another team says, now's your time, and they sign him as their manager. It's not like that anymore. There's no working your way up. It seems like if you played the game, that's what the younger people respect more. It's like, did you play? Where did you play? How did you play? What's your stats? Why should I listen to you? Type of attitude. So, the whole, generational thing is just, everything is advancing. Everything is maturing so much quickly, and then everybody wants it now. They don't want that. Okay, we're going to grow as a team. It's going to take 2 or 3 years. Nobody, fans don't appreciate that, or they don't go to the game. And they got to keep people in the stands to generate their money. So even if it's, I wouldn't be surprised if one day Daryl Strawberry's, managing the New York Mets,
yeah.
just so they can, just have something over there. I don't know. But that's just the way it seems baseball's been going these days. It's kind of weird.
I wonder how you feel for these minor league coaches. All these minor league coaches that's from A ball, AA, AAA, and you just find out a dude fresh out, and just, it worked for Francona though. He was down there with Chicago for the longest, Coach Michael Jordan, and he did a good job, and he finally got an opportunity. But I guess those are limited situations, where an opening comes. But yeah, I think it goes back to your point where it works at, people go for it. So But I'm just out there for the guys that's been working hard, putting in 10 plus years, been in the program, been in the system, and a new guy that just retired, you know, just got the opportunity.
Yeah, because it's also hard when managers can't bring their guys over.
Yeah.
You know, that's changed too. So, you know, you got GMs that want certain people, but does it work with the head, what the head manager wants to do? Mm-hmm. You know, so it used to be when you were the head manager, you brought your staff over, you played your style of baseball. Uh-huh. Everybody was on the same page, but it's a lot difficult for a manager to do his job these days, with the, you know, baseball general managers turning into Jerry Joneses.
Yeah, really are. Yeah, because I remember I was reading Moneyball, and right when Billy Bean first started, he was assistant GM, and that was when Tony La Russa was a coach. And he said that was Tony La Russa's team. Like, he picked the players, he picked the coach, he picked the lineup. If he didn't want a player, he was out. It was like full autonomy through Tony La Russa. And then through, you know, Art Howe and through the later coaches, Billy Bean made the lineup. You know, he said who's the hitting coaches, like all the way down the line. He made everything, you know, happen. And that's what it seemed like was happening now with players coming in and stuff like that. It used to have to be checked off by the coach first, but now it's coaches don't know. They're just there to manage. They got to be tough.
With the, you know, the Toronto head coach coming over to Boston, it was, you know, he was Gruden. You know, he got traded for prospects.
Yeah, they did something on the MLB Network about that. That's like the fourth time in history that a coach got traded for a player. And
I thought that was a common thing.
Well, not like a lot of the time nowadays. You know, you get signed contracts, you go out.
Normally, it's money.
Yeah, it's a money thing.
It's rarely prospects. It could be a player and money, but these are prospects.
Man, that's kind of tough. Like,
it's like you don't really have a long stay there. You know, it's like if you get some of your foreign players in for a coach, it's like, hey, what do you think about the coach?
Yeah.
But that's who Boston tried to get last year, and they couldn't get him, so they finally got their guy. Let's, you know, the thing is, the players wanted him last year.
Yeah.
They didn't get it, so Valentine comes in, and he's already behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
Okay, players, you got the manager you wanted. I mean, even if you're terrible, you'll be better than you were this year.
Yeah.
So it should be pretty easy for you. So, you know, if it's not the playoffs, then it's another wrong move.
Yeah. I think over at Boston, they all backwards over there because the fan base is so strong. And they like microscope over there. They kind of like Dallas Cowboys. You make one bad move, everybody see it, and it's time for a change. So it's tough for anybody to get their feet on the ground.
They should never.
Well, then how are the Cubs doing then? Because they're, you know, go. If that's where you were going, go for it.
Yeah, the Cubs, that's one of them teams that's, they'll always have money. They always have a loyal, they always have a sellout crowd.
Yeah.
It just, their whole mentality, it got to change. Like, I know, you know, they got the new Boston GM and stuff, but they got some prospect players. Still got Soriano, you know. Still got him on the books. But that's a team I don't see changing. I really don't. It got to be something drastic to happen for them to.
Well, you just said, you know, the GM, the young gentleman, mm-hmm. For Boston. Well, that's where he's at now. He's in Chicago. Do you see, you know, he's been there for a couple of years now. Do you see any change whatsoever now that he's there?
No, I really don't.
So the media, given, you know, the dramatic change in the success of the Boston Red Sox to the general manager, you feel that it was more of a team and coaches and...
Definitely. I think it was definitely good managing by Terry Francona, and the team was pretty much all the way there. Besides Youkilis coming in, that was one of Theo Epstein's choices, but pretty much everybody else was... No, veteran guys that was there before his tenure there.
So with Theo having a couple of years and nothing changing, so it must be a hoax. It must be a jinx on that team. Is that what it is?
I don't know. I think so. I think you got to be a special guy if you're going to break two, you know, World Series, you know, one with 100 years and Cubs is going on. I don't know how many now. So if he do that, then I apologize. That dude got the Midas touch, but I think it's going to take a lot more than him to turn around Chicago.
Yeah, I think, it, you know, ownership and general manager, just, you know, the whole front office needs to change first and become baseball first instead of business first. I think they're happy, like what you said, with their stands being filled. I mean, if it comes to a televised game due to Wrigley Field, they're always going to get the nighttime game, prime time. So, you know, they're relaxed because their money's coming in, unlike, you know, the Marlins with a brand new stadium can't sell it out. You know, Oakland, here's a team that is consistently dominating in their division, fighting in their division, and recently being the exciting team in the playoffs, can't even sell out playoff games.
Yeah.
You know, so to me, that I think it's just office getting comfortable. You know, their money's coming in, bills are getting paid, we're making money, everything's good. Who cares if the team's winning or losing? So eventually the fans need to step up and, you know, get a little sick and tired of what's going on, because I would like to see what would happen. And I know they've been talking about it. You know, you have the Green Bay Packers. The owner is the city.
Yeah, I like that
motto.
What
happens if Chicago would be able to do something like that, where the fans, because, you know, next to St. Louis, St. Louis is known to be, you know, the greatest baseball fans. But when it comes through thick or thin, it's got to be Cub fans.
Yeah.
I would really like to see what would happen if it went on the market and the city was able to own the team. I think then you'd see the Cubs in the playoffs and being a nice competitive team. Because they've always had the players.
Yeah. They just got to put it all together, you know. Soriano, I think, is kind of weighing them down a little bit. That big contract kind of, I think it represents the old Chicago. Because his career has just been going down ever since he left Yankees. You know, he went to Washington, didn't want to play for Frank Robinson, went to Chicago, and it's just been going down.
Yeah, but one thing, you know, since you brought that up, what do you guys think is going to happen with the Granderson contract coming up, you know, Swisher contract coming up, and
their
performance in the World Series? Do you guys see them as Yankees next year?
No, I do not. Just because the culture of the Yankees is results now. And with that, you know, with that lineup so deep, with Ichiro coming in and, you know, with all these players coming in, if you don't perform, you're gone. I think definitely they're going to get rid of Swisher. I think they're going to keep Granderson because he had a bad, you know, last
playoff. He was the man the whole season during the regular season.
Yeah, and I think that they're really going to try Gardner. Are they going to look for another solid outfielder? I think they're going to give Gardner a shot to be an everyday player. And I think Swisher is going to be on the way out, because Swisher, he's been good when, you know, the best player's been bad. But, you know, I don't think he's the type of player that could afford to be bad on a team like the Yankees.
Well, Yankee fan, what about Mr. Baseball, Derek Jeter, with the severe injury that he took and his age? Do you see him?
I don't see him playing again. I think he's still on the book for the contract. He still got that contract money, but I don't see him playing again. I really don't. That's weird to say.
So you don't see him on the ball field at all? Do you see him changing positions?
I see him giving a tryout somewhere. I see him doing the old Andy Pettit run, but I really don't think that. I think some team will pick him up, but I think he has 1 year max.
He's a Yankee. He's going to retire as shortstop on the Yankees.
I don't think so.
I think he's winding down, but you can't see Jeter in a San Francisco jersey or a Boston jersey or a Baltimore jersey.
You might see him in a Blue Jays jersey.
I don't think he'll do that. I think Jeter, he's so iconic just by him getting the number 2 with all the single-digit numbers being all Hall of Famers, all retired in Yankees Hall of Fame. I think he's going to retire on top. If he can't go this year, it's going to be a big ceremony. Everybody going to be crying. He's going to have a speech. And they're going to raise the jersey, the flag, put him on the wall. And that's going to be his memory.
All right, that sounds real good. But did you ever envision Brett Favre in a Minnesota Viking uniform?
Yes.
In a New York Jets uniform?
Yes.
I think his pride, you didn't see that. I think his pride, though, is really going to take it over. That I found out that New York really want to turn the other page. I think he still want to prove, you know, stick it to New York. So I think that he's going to try to play somewhere else. And I think it's only going to be like a 1 year, 2 year max type of thing. But I don't see him retiring as a Yankee. I really don't. I see him trying to play
Cano
elsewhere.
At second base, he's not going to, if they were trying to move him out of position to prolong his career, the natural position would be second base. But being that it's his left foot, all the push off going to second base, it's going to be on his bad foot. So would Derek Jeter even consider learning to play first base?
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking first base would be a good shot for him. Put the sheriff either in the outfield or DH him. You know, another thing too, we haven't talked about A-Rod. That's been in the big hoopla in the news. But I think he would try first base, though.
Yeah, not for the Yankees. Teixeira over there and his contracts, yeah, I was going, well, yeah, he can learn it, but would he be the better defensive player over at third base? The only thing I can see him staying there as a team is because, you know, he's leading with, you know, hits.
Yeah.
And the amount of hits that he has. And it's very important for the Yankees to retire guys for their whole season, especially that lead a statistical category.
Yeah.
You know, and once his number's retired, you know, it's kind of strange where you got number one, Billy Bean, and then number two is going to be Derek Jeter, two polar opposites.
Uh-huh.
I just don't see him wanting to go anywhere else, and I don't think the Yankees want him to go anywhere else. I think maybe a player's coach position to where he might come out in a spot here and there as a, you know, a PH, a pinch hitter. But, you know, depending in the off season on how fast he can get back on that heel and push off and see where he's at, I think that's going to the Yankees will make a quick assumption. And as they do, you know, even with their Reggie Jacksons and their Thurman Munsons, it's like, oh, you can't play no more? Bye. Mm-hmm. We're going to celebrate you, put you up. We love you, yeah, yeah. But, man, it seems like they're forgotten quick.
Oh, yeah.
They make decisions quick. They don't want to – they don't take chances.
Yeah.
And so it'll be real interesting. But, the, you know, the A-Rod, on the A-Rod situation, I do think he's going to get traded to the Marlins, which is definitely going to help the New York Yankees out. I think the Marlins are looking at it like maybe he'll break the home run record, maybe because his hometown is Miami.
Uh-huh.
And they do want to, you know, their community being dominant Latino,
mm-hmm.
is everything is based for them. They want their family to continue.
Yeah.
That they'll use him more as a spokesperson. But I just don't see him
producing,
being happy.
Yeah.
You know, as a golden ticket.
Yeah.
So whether he plays or he wants that home run record, he'll, you know, he's going to be kicking and dragging. You know, they're going to be pulling him off. You know, that's just the type of player he is. But in the National League, I just don't see how that's going to work for him.
Yeah. It might be another team that's in the mix. Miami makes the most sense since this is probably going to be his last big contract, because I think it's going to still be another big contract. You know, he had three so far, and I think this will be his last little four-year deal type of contract that'll happen. But I think A-Rod might surprise you. I think he needs a different, you know, a change of scenery. You know, I hate to see A-Rod go, because he was one of the highlights of making the, you know, modern-day Murderers Row team. But, you know, with him out, and I think somebody's going to fill a spot, you know, in New York, somebody big they're going to sign. But I think him in Miami will be, I think it'll be a good fit. I think that might boost Miami team with, you know, Jose Reyes still being there. And maybe they could gain some more players, all the players they traded away, you know, this season. They could start building something, build it the right way.
Well, with the Yankees always having a lockdown defensive squad, especially in the infield, as a Yankee fan, how do you feel knowing that short and third are empty?
I could just see it. It's weird. It's weird because both shortstops, both iconic players. But you know what? It's going to be filled with another star. You know, I'm thinking the contracts that's looking vacant right now. I'm thinking we're going to get, I don't know how to predict it, but it's going to be somebody big that's going to fill in for third base. I'm thinking David Wright.
Well, let's hope so. But with the luxury tax, that could put everything in a whole different perspective. You know, the luxury tax comes into place in a couple of years. And from what I read, I think the Yankees are $180 million, $192 million over the luxury tax.
Ooh.
So I think they have to get it down to $180 million. Yeah, but who knows? The Yankees might say, who cares? We'll go ahead and pay the tax. This is, you know, with the Yes Network.
Yeah, I was about to say the Yes Network. Just throw two specials.
Keep doing what they're doing, but it's really going to take some of the bigger market teams that try to compete with the Yankees. They're not going to be able to due to the economy, and they're going to have to get to that luxury tax to be able to save that money to get the players that they need. And once again, it'll be like the 70s all over again, where the Yankees' payroll is three times more than everybody in the league. I just think that's the way it's going to go, unless everybody ends up getting their own TV network.
Chicago got theirs, you know. Yankees got theirs. So.
Tampa has theirs.
Yeah. It's Tampa, though. People be on, like, the beach or something, you know.
Because I thought he was going to say Longoria. They were going to get Longoria.
That might be a fit.
Yeah, I think, you know, Braun, Longoria, I see those two maybe become the Yankees near future.
I like to see Weeks over there.
Which Weeks?
Young Ricky. Not Ricky Weeks, Jamil Weeks. I like to see him over there.
Yeah, Cano's there, though. There's no way.
I move Cano to third and put Weeks over at second.
They ain't going to move him. I ain't going to upset the power. But I'm thinking.
Cano is second base. He's one of the best second basemen in a long time.
Jamil Weeks, though, Ricky Weeks, though. I never thought about that. He might be a good fill-in for a third baseman until they get a bigger player. You know, they always get under-the-radar guys that's like, you know, they got Andrew Jones, Eric Chavez on the bench.
That's because when all these players were young, they dreamed to be a Yankee. And get the opportunity to become a Yankee.
They'll take that role. Yeah, that's true.
Hey, we're coming to a close here on MLP number 9, so let's just go around the horn one more time and touch up on Morris League before we get out. What's up and coming? What events are going on for your Morris League?
So tonight, actually, this Monday, will be the opening of the Morris Basketball League. We have four teams in it. We got two games, one starting at 9, one starting at 9:30. You know, it's a brand-new start for a different sport, so I'm real excited about it. See how it go. No, I'm an official. I don't have a team, but I'll be officiating the games. You know, I've learned up.
So you do the tip off. You able to throw that ball straight up? Nice.
Oh yeah. I was practicing yesterday. Yeah, I got my whistle. I got my little uniform all ready to go. I'm looking to see some good basketball season and start up another.
Morris League Zebra shirt that's going to be available soon?
You
guys are already on top of that too?
Yeah. Where is it at? We did it different than the Zebra shirts. We've been looking at
We had
different sports, and we like the whole soccer approach where they got the highlighters on different colors. So instead of Zebra, we got orange shirt, black shorts that says Morris Basketball official on the back.
Black shorts.
Yeah.
Man, what's going on? You guys too? Orange and black?
A little Halloween going on this week, you know.
So nothing to do with the Giants. No.
More Baltimore than Giants, you know. But I like to say we taping our fifth episode of Sack Dugout this Wednesday. We're going to be out there. We're going to be highlighting MVP players of the week in the Morris League. And it should be good, you know, for Morris Media on that aspect. Be this Wednesday, and for everybody want to find all our episodes, it's all going to come out in a package pretty soon. We'll keep you updated, but we'll have episodes 1 through 5 coming out as a package so you guys can enjoy all the taping that we've been doing.
All right, and since I know everybody out there is going to be wanting to know what's going on, go ahead and hit up, subscribe to our Facebook page, like our page, and also put your baseball predictions for Game 7.
Yeah.
So on our next MLP broadcast, we'll let everybody know who was right, who was wrong, who was silly.
Yeah.
See who's out there. So go ahead, go to our Morris League Facebook page and put down your predictions. Let us know who you think MVP is, who's going to win Game 7, and what the score is. And we'll be talking about that all next week. So for Dominic and Dante Morris, myself, Todd Sullivan, we want to say thank you. MLP number 9, finished.